Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman and Kirk Crosby live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, starts now. This, my fellow Americans, is the broadcast for July the 6th in the year of our Lord, 2020. This is our one of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio and the traditions of our founding fathers. We use the blueprint for liberty, the Constitution for the United States of America, as our guide. We're convinced the checks and balances put in place by the founders, brilliant, one of the great solutions that we have at our fingertips today. We're also in favor of restoration. We reject revolution. Restoration, the great way back, folks. Returning to the principles that made America great, using the checks and balances, and working hard to get there. It's going to take a religious and moral people, no doubt, to make it all happen. And man, have we got a road of hope. But you know what? Americans are robust. Americans are resilient. Americans can get it done. Hope you had an absolutely delightful 4th of July extended weekend. I know that I did. On Saturday, 4th of July, we were live. Happy Independence Day. Today, that was the 4th of July broadcast. We commemorate the signing of the Declaration of Independence and the truths enshrined therein. It also was my birthday, so I had a wonderful day with family, focused on God, family, country all weekend. It was just phenomenal. We also talked about President Donald J. Trump speaks at Mount Rushmore. And he was in South Dakota July 3rd, 2020. We broke that speech down the first hour on Saturday in great detail, played the whole speech. Well, I shouldn't say that. We played six massive sections of the speech. Didn't play it all. But we certainly covered it. It was a tremendous speech. And I didn't know this, but it turns out that President Trump spoke Saturday evening as well. And we need to get a hold of that speech and break that dude down. But I hear it was just as excellent. God bless America. That was hour one of Saturday's show. Hour two, Sam Bushman and Richard Mack broke down a bunch of topics relating to Independence Day. And we read a speech, an article that my daughter wrote for school called Why? Because All Lives Matter. Great prose from 16-year-olds on the broadcast for the 4th of July. All lives matter. She even goes into animal life. And that matters, too. Wow. She talks about the American society becoming more wicked and turning against God. We need to change that and return. Just great stuff. Sam and Richard Mack continue telling great stories of inspiration and liberty. We talked about one of my favorite, the book called The Swamp Fox, How Francis Marion Saved the American Revolution. John Aller wrote the book. We interviewed him some time ago on the broadcast. I also talked about John Glover and the Marblehead Regiment, one of my favorite stories of the Revolution as well. We encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, to continue this enthusiasm, gratitude, and activism well beyond the 4th of July. We also finished by talking about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints president. His name is President Russell M. Nelson, and he said this: I've learned that these emotions of fear, isolation, and danger are best handled by immersing oneself into the care of other people. In other words, the best way you can deal with isolation and fear and worry and concern and, you know what? Focus on the care of the administration to others. He said this: the road ahead will always be bumpy, but be clear, the destination will be serene and secure. So fasten your seatbelt, hang on through the bumps, and do what's right, and your rewards will be eternal. We finished on that note because I think that's what the founding fathers stood for, believed in, and worked hard to make sure happens. They gave their lives, their fortunes, their sacred honor for all of us. Talk about a selfless act as they looked to Jesus Christ for liberty, not government. But they understood that government was necessary, but it must be limited, it must be full of checks and balances, and the people must be a good, honest, moral, religious people and guard their liberties jealously. That was the broadcast live on the 4th of July, ladies and gentlemen. And that's the recap. News the networks refuse to use today starts now. Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org with us. Hope you had a wonderful 4th, sir.
Well, I sure did, Sam. The Independence Day weekend was relaxing and informative. I learned a few new things, and I enjoyed the weekend very much. Thank you.
That's what it's about, my good friend Lowell. All right, we want to talk about this SCOTUS opinion. It was pitched as a national opinion, if you will, about school choice, where the Supreme Court basically saying, hey, you know what, we can give funding to government school folks, yes. Religious school folks, yes. I don't think they really talked about homeschool, but that's a coming. Headline says, SCOTUS opinion in Montana, school choice case right, but wrong. Let's talk about it, Lowell.
Yeah, you wouldn't think it'd be wrong. It'd be a great win for education, a great win for parents and parental choice in education. And in a lot of ways, I must admit that it was. I think you discussed this briefly on your show last week, and so we may not need to go into the details of this case, only that the Espinoza family wanted to take the tax credit provided by the Montana State Legislature. The $150 non-refundable tax credit, which means that, you know, $150 of the money that they donated to a school of their choice should have been able to deduct that same amount from their income tax liability, right? So if you have a that means they wouldn't get any money from the state if they owed no tax, but if they owed $1,000 in tax and they had this $150 non-refundable tax credit, then instead of paying the state $1,000, they would pay the state $850. So that was essentially the law the legislature passed. But that was in 2015. The very same year, the Montana Department of Revenue said, you can't do that. And they pointed to a clause in the Constitution. I wanted to read that clause. It's Article 10, Part 10, Section 6, which says, quote, the legislature shall not make any direct or indirect appropriation from any public fund or money to aid any church, school, academy, seminary, college, university, or other literary or scientific institution controlled in whole or in part by any church, sect, or denomination, end of quote. Now, interestingly, Sam, I do not believe that a tax credit is an appropriation of money, but that point was probably not argued at trial. Certainly wasn't included in the consideration by the Supreme Court here, but the parents, Espinoza, who hoped to send their children to a private school, Stillwater Christian Academy, were not allowed to use the scholarships they were given through Big Sky Scholarships because of this rule. Well, the parents sued, won the case at trial, but the Montana Supreme Court in December of 2018 reversed the trial court's decision. So the parents appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court said last week that the Montana Supreme Court was in error to strike down the program. Their reasoning was that the provision of the Montana Constitution that prohibited aid to religious schools was in conflict with the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, and this clause had been incorporated against the state through the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment. So it's clear that Espinoza is a significant victory for school choice advocates and for religious liberty, but Sam, here's what's wrong about it. It was a loss for state sovereignty. Why do I say that? Because the sovereign state of Montana is, or should be, the final authority in Montana, in this clearly domestic area of education. The state's vested in the general government zero authority for domestic education, for tax policy, and so forth. And yes, parents should be free to patronize the school of their choice, whether it's home, private, or public school. They should get tax credit for whatever cost they bear in funding the education of their students. In fact, this is one of the reasons I got involved in politics, Sam. Gun ownership and education, those are the two big things for me, you know, 40 years ago, whatever. Not only did we pay a private school to teach our children, but we also were forced at gunpoint to pay taxes to the state to educate other children, too. So we'd end up paying $3,000 to the school and then $3,000 more to the state. We were double billed or double taxed, so to speak, which I thought was simply unfair. So this case, this Ellis Espinoza case, reminds me of December 20 of 2013 here in Utah, when Utah's definition of marriage was ruled unconstitutional by a federal judge, Robert Shelby. He said it violated the 14th Amendment, just as the U.S. Supreme Court ruled in this Montana case. Yet this incorporation doctrine was conjured out of thin air. The amendments to the U.S. Constitution were never intended to apply to the several states. In fact, doing so would essentially create a federal veto over state laws, which is a massive expansion of central government authority, which is exactly opposite of the stated purpose of the Bill of Rights in the first place, Sam.
All right, quick pause. I want to point out something, and let's talk about it. Liberty Roundtable Live, Lowell Nelson, Campaign for Liberty on your radio.
I'd advise Mr. Trump to stop whining and go try to make his case to get votes.
The press has created a rigged system. They even want to try and rig the election.
Well, I tell you what, it helps in Ohio that we got Democrats in charge of the machines.
And poisoned the mind of so many of our voters.
At the polling booths, where so many cities are corrupt and voter fraud is all too common. And then they say, oh, there's no voter fraud in our country.
I come from Chicago. So I want to be honest. It's not as if it's just Republicans who have monkeyed around with elections in the past. Sometimes Democrats have too. You know, whenever people are in power, they have this tendency to try to, you know, tilt things in their direction.
There's no vote.
You start whining before the game's even over. Whenever things are going badly for you and you lose, you start blaming somebody else. Then you don't have what it takes to be in this job.
Hi, I'm Patty, wife of former Congressman Steve Stockman. In Congress, Steve sought impeachment of Eric Holder for his corruption of the Justice Department and his fast and furious gun running that caused Border Agent Brian Talley's death. Steve called for arrest of Lois Lerner for her contempt of Congress as it investigated her targeting of conservative nonprofit groups. After 4 years, four grand juries, and millions of tax dollars, Steve Stockman is in prison. His case involved four checks to nonprofits. DOJ has one standard for Hillary Clinton, but another for folks like President Trump and my husband. We've spent all our savings, all Steve's retirement, and much of mine. Steve Stockman has fought for you and America. Won't you join me now to fight for Steve? To help, text FIGHT to 444-999. Text FIGHT to 444-999 or go to defendapatriot.com. defendapatriot.com.
All right, I want to throw out a couple of quick things, my opinion regarding the SCOTUS decision. It's clear that Espinoza, or the SCOTUS decision, they say, is a significant victory for school choice advocates and religious liberty. However, it's a loss for state sovereignty. I agree it's a loss for state sovereignty. But there's a false premise here, I think, a little bit, Lowell, and let me throw it out and see what you think. You know, people believe we should have school choice for everybody. People should be able to choose government school if they want to. No, I don't think so, because it requires my tax dollars. You shouldn't be able to choose something that rapes my wallet. Now, if you want to talk about a public school where you guys all take turns and house the teacher in your home or, you know, fund it yourselves and call it public because anybody can attend, that's up to you. But stealing my money, government school, is not an acceptable choice because I have a choice. I can homeschool my kids right now, but I don't have a choice not to pay. And that's where I find the rub. That's number one. So we need to be very careful on that. Number two, this tax incentive where we say, hey, everybody should receive a tax break. That's different than the government handing out funding to everybody. But a tax break just means you keep your own money and you have less. And my problem with all that is the loopholes. Okay, it isn't fair that a grandma that doesn't have any kids at home doesn't get a tax break. But I get one because I choose to have children and want to educate them elsewhere. See, taxes are supposed to not be direct. They're supposed to be at the border called tariffs. They're supposed to be apportionment taxes. There may be supposed to be a sales tax, but it should apply to everyone equally. And as long as we accept this loophole where I get a break and you don't for whatever variety of reasons, we're pitting winners against losers. And that's my problem with it. Well, your thoughts?
Oh, I totally agree, Sam. Again, one of the reasons I got involved in politics in the beginning was because I thought the tax was the legal plunder of the people. It's a theft. It's the seizure of your property. You own the fruits of your labor. And when any government seizes those properties, your dollars right out of your back pocket, that's theft. And, in a free marketplace, the ideal environment, in my opinion, would be that you spend your money, the fruits of your labor, on however you want to spend them. If you want to donate to a public school and send your children there, great. If you want to spend that money to pay for the education of your children at home, great. But I totally agree. In no way is it moral for the government to force you at gunpoint to give up your hard-earned wealth to fund whatever they want to fund, whether it be a school or a military objective. So, yeah, I totally agree.
All right. The Declaration of Independence was primarily written by somebody else than you might think. Do you know who Richard Henry Lee is, Lowell?
Boy, I sure did not until yesterday, Sam. This is a fascinating gentleman. According to a book that was discussed, the LouRockwell.com podcast, Richard Henry Lee was the original author of the Declaration of Independence. He was just a fascinating, we can't talk about everything he did, but here's a few things that Richard Henry Lee did that just is amazing. His family came to America in 1640. Yeah, just 20 years after the Plymouth Plantation, his father, Thomas, received 500,000 acres of land stretching west into western Ohio. He got this land from the king, so he was well-connected. So Richard Henry Lee, along with his siblings, were very well-educated. They were homeschooled from age 5 to 12, then sent to boarding school during their younger teenage years, and then to universities in England when they reached their mid-teens. So by the age of 20, they were very well educated, the finest universities in England. His family grew tobacco, which they imported to England, which was a very profitable business for the family. And so his background really makes his position regarding independence all the more interesting. Strong ties to England, but Richard Henry Lee was a member of the First Continental Congress. He, in fact, had written a resolution for independence and then moved to adopt that resolution. And the author of this book said there was just silence in the chamber. He wanted to see who else would support the idea. No one did at first, but he had a ace in his back pocket, a backup. And his backup was John Adams. And so John Adams seconded the motion, and after some discussion, it was voted upon. Five yeses, five noes, and three cast no vote at all, so it was a tie. So Lee began campaigning for independence. He would entertain people in his home, persuade them of the need for independence. In fact, he became known as the Cicero of the American Revolution. I didn't know that. Soon thereafter, on July 2nd, of 1776, the Continental Congress again voted on the resolution, and it passed with 12 yes votes, no nay votes, one abstention. So look how effective he was at persuading members of the Continental Congress. Very effective. Well, so Lee returned to his business, and then Thomas Jefferson was on the committee of five to write the declaration that we have today, several drafts, of course. In fact, one of the things over the weekend I read was the draft of the declaration that Thomas Jefferson wrote. But Jefferson used much of Lee's resolution in his draft of the declaration. So there's kind of like the story of Richard Henry Lee's influence on the Declaration of Independence. Richard Henry.
So in a way, you could say Jefferson got the dunk, but Lee got the assist.
Yeah, certainly could. Lee fought in the Revolutionary War for Virginia. He was also Washington's main support in Congress. He was really quite wealthy, and he was able to provide a great deal of personal monetary support to Washington's army. The Continental Congress authorized a meeting in Philadelphia to amend the Articles of Confederation. This is jumping ahead 12 years. Lee, George Washington, and Patrick Henry were asked to attend the convention in Philadelphia, but all declined. Patrick Henry said he smelled a rat and wasn't going to go. Lee was already in the Congress, and Washington said he had already done all he could do. Madison later prevailed upon Washington to attend the Philadelphia convention, saying, "We really can't do anything if you're not there, Mr. Washington." So he ended up going and chairing the convention. Turns out that George Mason, George Washington, and Richard Henry Lee were close personal friends. Washington and Lee had met at the age of 22. They'd gone into business together in the Ohio Land Company. Richard Henry Lee and George Mason were both strong anti-federalists, meaning they supported state sovereignty as opposed to a national government. See,
all right, so hold on. Who had the business together? Lee and who?
Lee and George Washington.
Wow, okay.
And Richard Henry Lee and George Washington were both on the opposite side of the fence than George Washington, though, when it came to state sovereignty. Because, see, George Washington, he chaired the Philadelphia Convention, where they came up with the Constitution, which proposed a stronger central government. But Richard Henry Lee and George Mason, they were both strong, what they called, anti-federalists, even though they were federalists. So, in other words,
that's a weird thing to understand. Let's be clear the difference between nationalist and federalist. Go ahead, sir, because that's the rubbing point, right?
Yeah, that's a big rub here. A federalist was a nationalist, right? And so when you talk about the Federalist Papers, those were written by the nationalists.
Okay, so let's be clear. They were for a big, strong national federal government.
Right, exactly. And the anti-federalists believed in federalism, which was a strong state sovereignty running the show, not the national government.
So the states' rights folks and the states creating the limited, tiny federal government were federalists, even though they wrote the anti-federalist papers. The people who were for a strong government at the expense of state sovereignty, they were nationalists, but they wrote the Federalist Papers. Got it?
Exactly right.
Good.
Exactly right. See, we think that today we live in a day when the media is always telling the lies. Well, it was well and alive back then too, very much alive. It was a propaganda piece. The Federalist Papers was a propaganda piece to influence the delegates to the ratifying convention in New York. They had very little to do with any other state, and in fact, they had a limited effect on the delegates in New York.
So just to be very clear, in modern days, Sam Bushman is an anti-federalist for federalism against the nationalists. That's who I am.
Perfect. Exactly who I am, too. That's why I feel such a strong kinship with Richard Henry Lee and George Mason.
Patrick Henry was nonetheless with them.
Exactly right. Very much so. And Richard Henry Lee just pled with George Mason to introduce a Bill of Rights at the Philadelphia Convention. Sam, we can...
Pick it up on the other side, of course, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the one and only Liberty Roundtable Live, nationally, globally syndicated radio broadcast on the Loving Liberty Radio Network, lovingliberty.net.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Wendy King.
Florida has surpassed 200,000 cases as the state reported an additional 10,000 new positive cases in one day. It's the fourth straight day that the state has reported more than 10,000 new cases. Miami-Dade County Mayor Carlos Jimenez spoke on CBS.
What concerns me is the positivity rate. We had it down to about 8% of the people getting tested were showing up positive. Now they're over 20% are showing up positive.
Medical contributor Dr. Agus spoke of the rise in cases.
To me, this is a failure on all of our part in terms of the simple preventive methods of wearing a mask and social distancing. I hear arguments on the internet, they're emailed to me, well, kids die in a physical education class wearing a mask. And the answer is that's just not true.
This is USA Radio News.
Hi, this is Wayne Allen Root. Are you in need of a healthcare program? You're in luck. As a member of Liberty HealthShare, you're part of a community that comes together to share their medical expenses. You can sign up throughout the year with membership starting as early as the following month. There are no contracts, no commitments. There is no network, so you choose your own doctors and hospitals. Starting as low as $199 per month, Liberty HealthShare has programs for singles, couples, and families of any size. I joined. I'm a member. My four children are members. Liberty has saved me $72,000 compared to what I was paying for health insurance over these 4 years. Liberty HealthShare is a non-profit ministry. It is not insurance. Your money goes towards helping other members with their eligible medical expenses. And in your time of need, other members are there for you. You can feel good knowing you're part of a community of like-minded individuals who come together to bear one another's burdens. To find out more, call 855-58-LIBERTY, 855-58-LIBERTY, or go to libertyhealthshare.org/WayneRoot. libertyhealthshare.org/WayneRoot.
The impact of COVID-19 on jobs has been well publicized, but Labor Secretary Eugene Scalia says he believes the nation's actually doing better than some expected.
I think it's really important to, again, remember how much better than projected we've done so far. Back in May, it was projected that we would lose 7.5 million jobs. Well, we've now, over the last couple of months, added 7.5 million jobs. In other words, we're about 15 million ahead of where the experts said we were going to do.
He was on Fox News Sunday. Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb on CBS's Face the Nation says it's not going to end soon.
We face a hard fall. We're going to take all this infection into the fall and winter. It's not clear that it's going to get better. We're going to have epidemics that come and go across the nation in different cities. They'll light up at different times.
But while cases spiked up, there has been a slight leveling off in the number of U.S. deaths. You're listening to USA Radio News.
All right, Lil Nelson, campaignforliberty.org with us. Anything else on Richard Henry Lee, Lil?
Well, what a fantastic Independence Day weekend. I studied up on Richard Henry Lee. Not only did he first propose independence from England, but he also wrote most of the declaration that was adopted by the Continental Congress on July 2nd of 1776. That was the day John Adams thought would be celebrated, but it turns out that 2 days later they took another vote, and that's why July 4th is celebrated, which no matter, it's okay. I don't care which day, but I'm glad that we celebrate it. Richard Henry Lee also proposed the verbiage of the Bill of Rights. Basically, he was the author of many of those amendments, and just a wonderful gentleman. He was upset, Sam, that the 10th Amendment did not include the word expressly, as in expressly delegated. He put that in there. The power is not expressly delegated to the United States by the Constitution. It was the way he wanted it to word, but that was not to be. The word expressly was removed from his draft of that particular, which became the 10th Amendment. And Alexander Hamilton then took advantage of this implied power to get a national bank to coin money. So this implied powers doctrine has been one of the biggest things that the general government has used to usurp power over the past two centuries. So just one other thing about Richard Henry Lee I'll mention. The proceedings of the Philadelphia Convention were secret. I hadn't realized, Sam, that they were secret for so long.
That's why when the lady eventually said, what on earth did what kind of government do we have? What did you create for us? What the heck? Once it finally came to light, people were like, wait a minute, what have you done? Well, you have a republic if you could keep it, was the answer. But I bring this up because people were completely in the dark.
That's right. And people did not know how the delegates at the Philadelphia Convention voted or what they argued from, you know, on the various issues. Obviously, they were aware of that the Constitution had been written during that convention, but Madison did not release his notes until after his term as president was over in 1860. His notes came out in 1819. But it's a whoa. That's from 1787 or 1789 until 19. That's like 10, 20, 30 years after the convention. Finally, people understood who argued for what in the Philadelphia Convention. And then 2 years later, in 1821, Yates' notes came out and revealed the fact that Hamilton had pushed for a national government. He, in fact, pushed for lifetime office for president and for lifetime service for senators. I mean, this was appalling to the people of that day.
And it's appalling to me today still, sir.
Yeah, me too, Sam. So that's the story on Richard Henry Lee, a newfound respect for this gentleman, Sam.
Amen to that. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. In modern day, like or dislike President Trump, he's making a tremendous difference in so many ways. We covered on Saturday the incredible speech he gave July the 3rd. They called it a white supremacist rally, but that was a lie in South Dakota. And just a tremendous job at Mount Rushmore, in my humble opinion. We covered that very well. But the next day, President Trump gave another speech. Did you know that? Lowell's got the details.
And I want to quote a couple of paragraphs from his speech, Sam. He is just quite the speechmaker. Quote, never forget, we are one family and one nation. This rich heritage belongs to every citizen, young and old, first generation American and 10th generation American. This heritage belongs to every citizen, young and old, first generation American. We want to go from first generation to 10th generation. It matters not. We are American. We are from the USA. This great heritage belongs to citizens of every background and of every walk of life. End of quote. I mean, you can tell this is Trump because he's repeating himself two or three times in each paragraph. And I mean, it's just amazing to listen to
and
him.
And some people say that just shows how uneducated President Trump is. He speaks on a fourth grade level. He this, he that, and they mock him for this. However, if you're truly educated, you understand that repetitiveness is not by mistake. It's by design, and it's designed to make sure you remember salient points of what he has to say. It is not a mistake. It is not ignorance. It is brilliance to do so. When you look at a newspaper or whatever, this repetitive third grade, fifth grade, whatever speech or delivery is intentional. I'm convinced of that, Lowell.
Absolutely right. In fact, I thought of this when you were recapping Saturday's show, when you ended with the statement of the first presidency about we are basically saying we're one family, we're all children of God. And I thought about that when I reread this. Trump says we are one family. Yeah, we are one family, one big family on planet Earth. We're all children of God. So I don't know, there's some similarities there that struck me. The only nit I would pick with Trump here is this notion that we are one nation. The founders never thought that we were one nation, but that we were a republic of republics, they said, many states in a federated republic. And the more we think of ourselves as a nation, the easier it is for a national government to usurp authority over the states. And but that's the only nit that I would pick.
And the debate there, again, is a little bit of the federalist / nationalist debate. We don't want to become nationalists at all, but we do support the federalism idea, which says there needs to be enough central government, limited, chained down, created in a list. Here's what you can do in order to keep these republics together. Otherwise, they go their own way. So there needs to be a little bit of nationalism there. But I would call it federalism, not nationalism. And I bring those words up on purpose so you don't get mixed up. There needs to be a little bit of federalism there, not nationalism. I said nationalism because I want to highlight the point. That's not right. Federalist versus nationalist sounds like, well, Sam, those are just two words you're talking about. No, they have different intentions. One says a very strong state, a very strong republic, a series of republics with a very limited, very defined in scope, narrow, tiny federalist part of government with incredible checks and balances. The nationalists say, really, you're playing games. We want nationalism. And what they want to do is drive a truck through it to where the states become puppets. And that's really the balance we're talking about that the Founding Fathers fought about in the Federalist and the Anti-Federalist papers. The Anti-Federalists were really the Federalists. The Federalists were really nationalists. And the whole reason for the tweaked language is for deception purposes. Understand, I support complete state power in a very minimal, well-defined, constitutional, nationalist government, and nothing more. And as many of these Founding Fathers warned, who were the, quote, anti-federalists, they told you, you give them this, they'll drive a truck through it, and boy, howdy, have they been right.
Well put, Sam. Absolutely well put. I totally agree. Now, President Trump continued his speech saying, let me also say a word to those in the media who falsely and consistently label their opponents as racist, who condemn patriotic citizens who offer a clear and truthful defense of American unity. That's what our people are doing. We want a clear and faithful defense of American history, and we want unity. He pointed his guns at the media and really called them out. He says, when you level these false charges, you not only slander me, you not only slander the American people, but you slander generations of heroes who gave their lives for America. You slander people much braver and much more principled than you. You are slandering the young men who raised the flag at Iwo Jima and those who perished fighting for freedom in the Civil War. You slander them. You're dishonoring their great legacy and their memory by insisting that they fought for racism and they fought for oppression. They didn't fight for those things.
In fact, the Founding Fathers just did the opposite. If you look at the Declaration of Independence and their very lives, many of them freed the slaves on their deaths and everything else, and they literally fought for equality. They weren't perfect. They lived in a very difficult, different time that you can't judge through our lenses. And the fact is they set the stage for literally freedom for every single one of us.
Perfect, Sam. Trump concluded his speech by saying, we will not let the legacy of these heroes be tarnished by you, meaning the media. The more you lie, the more you slander, the more you try to demean and divide, the more we will work hard to tell the truth, and we will win.
And by the way, we'll help President Trump do this very thing. Anyway, email me, Lowell, the YouTube link to that speech if you can, and I'll grab that one as well. Tremendous work by the President of the United States, ladies and gentlemen. All right.
Cool.
We've got two topics we've got to cover in the last segment. Boy, howdy, are we struggling for time. Huge COVID case counting deception at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. John Rappaport on LouRockwell.com breaks this down for us. Lowell's got details in seconds.
Regrets? Oh, we're all going to have them. Doesn't matter who you are, what you do. At some point, you're going to wish you'd done something differently. You know, the woulda, coulda, shouldas. But let me tell you a couple of things you'll never regret. You'll never regret spending extra time talking to your teenager. Trust me. You'll never regret answering your 3-year-old's question about where the water in the bathtub comes from. And I've never seen anyone wish they hadn't sat in the kitchen laughing with their children and telling them goofy stories about when they were kids. Yeah, sure, we're all going to have regrets, but talking too much with our kids won't be one of them.
No matter what you talk about, love is what they'll hear. A thought from the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Visit us at Mormon.org.
I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. As a teenager, I gave my first public speech in my church. My hand shook, my heart pounded. I thought to myself, I can't do this, but somehow I did, and because I wanted to talk about things that were important, I persisted. I chided my church as a senior in high school for not seeming to care about the not yet born, for looking the other way, and for not taking a stand on life.
I will be in earnest. I will not equivocate, and I will not excuse. I will not retreat an inch, and I will be heard.
One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
All right, live and on your radio. We got a crank, man. We got a lot to cover. So little time. Huge COVID case count. I'm going to border on fraud here, lol. This isn't just an oversight or a mistake by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. John Rappaport on LouRockwell.com breaks it down. Lol, you got the details for us?
You betcha, Sam. He quotes, this Rappaport quotes some key pieces of an article in The Atlantic, and The Atlantic, states these facts, but then never comes to the bottom line conclusion. Basically, they say, we've learned that the CDC is making a debilitating mistake. They're combining test results that diagnose current coronavirus infections with test results that measure whether someone has ever had the virus. Basically,
see, but I reject that this is a mistake. I think this is intentionally done.
Oh yeah, I wouldn't doubt that a bit, Sam. That I agree with you. But they're doing it. Why? Because the number of fatalities per day is dwindling. Right up until the deaths. Let me put it this way: while the deaths were increasing, they would tout that number. The news media would just talk about nothing but the COVID deaths on the rise, on the rise. Then when it turned the corner and the deaths began dwindling, they couldn't promote the fact that deaths were going up because they were, in fact, going down. So they had to choose some other number to whip up the media frenzy about the COVID, the coronapocalypse. And so they chose case count. So they massive increase in the number of tests given, because the more testing you do, then the more cases you can count. And then they combine these two types of tests. One test, a viral test, tests whether you have the virus, and the antibody test.
Hold on, whether you have it physically right now or not.
Exactly. And then the antibody test, well, it tells you that, okay, your body has had the virus and has developed antibodies against the virus. And, of course, that's what you and I both want. We want the antibodies. That's why we want exposure with this virus, so that the body has an opportunity to generate, to build the antibodies for it. Well, you look at all the people who have been touched by the virus and have the antibodies. And there's way outnumbers the people who currently have the virus, right? But by combining those two numbers, you get this incredible increase, this inflation of case count numbers. And that's the number that you see on TV over and over. And, hundreds of times a day, that's the number the media and the government and the con artists, they deploy this number to scare people, to justify the lockdowns, and they use this number, Sam, to stop reopening of the economy. It's just insidious, Sam, what they're doing.
Well, and the problem with it is, again, the numbers are all mixed up. In Utah, there's, what, 2,500 people that have tested positive?
Something like that.
Is that right?
Well, I think the number's quite a bit bigger than that, Sam, 2,500
total. Okay, 24,952. What's that number? Anyway, they say 184 deaths.
Yeah.
What's that number then, Kurt?
Well, the deaths are 184, and then when they've tested, they've got about 25,000. And like Lowell says,
what about the 25,000?
More. Well, those are all the confirmed cases.
Yeah, that's
over
what I'm
the
saying.
Time. They don't. Well, I thought you said 2,500.
Oh, I'm sorry, 25,000. I'm sorry.
Yeah, anyway,
25,000. So out of a 3.5 million people state, 25,000, the only numbers that have supposedly proven have even been infected. And then out of
and how many of those are not even showing signs of it or whatever? And like Lowell said, they're using that. That's what they do here in Utah every day. They say, well, we got another 500 cases. You know, they don't.
Yeah, but here's what I want to talk about.
Only one more death. You know,
I want to talk about the deaths, though. 184 is all we've got out of 3.5 million people so far. And it's been what? They say this has been around now since January. So for literally a six-month period of time, you have 184 deaths in our state out of 3.5 million people, and 90-plus percent of those 184 deaths are people over 60 years old with underlying conditions. And now, don't misunderstand me. Those deaths matter, but I don't know how much you can blame it on the corona. They got to die of something. And so why don't we adjust our strategy to deal with this? And the answer is because they're lying. They want a pandemic for control, okay? This deception is not by accident. The big deal, writes John Rappaport, Lowell.
Yeah, the big deal is that they want to inflate the case count because they want to justify continued lockdown, Sam. They do not want us to reopen the economy. They want an excuse to continue to crash the economy so that they, I think, globalists, all can refashion the economy after their own making. They know the dollar is going to self-destruct. They want to introduce their own digital currency. They don't want you to have the wealth that you've accumulated over the years. I mean, there's a number of factors involved here. That's just several of them. But it's a big lie, this corona apocalypse, and they're pushing it with all they can because they want to remake. It's the Great Reset, Sam. They want to remake the world in their image, and this is one way to do that.
Well, and the only time they say it's fine is when they're talking about vaccines, right? That's no danger.
Yeah, the only time they say there's no danger is when they're talking about their own vaccines. It's incredible.
Well, the other thing, though, is they also say there's no danger if you want to riot and destroy property and vandalize and shoot and kill and murder and rape and pillage and plunder and just destroy everything we hold dear. Then it's okay, too. If you want to go to church now, you're going to kill everybody.
Yep.
Okay, one, it's just one insane.
One other thing to add here. I was thinking about this earlier. You know how we have the national debt clock that tracks our debt, et cetera. I mean, that thing's got to be whizzing, just to try to keep up. But I was wondering if they had the national abortion clock. And they do have what they call the usabortionclock.org, and I noticed that so far this year in the United States, we're at 443,796 on there. Now, if you compare that to the deaths, they say, of coronavirus, it's...
What do you got in America for the deaths of coronavirus, Kurt? Just over 100,000?
Well, that's right, 130, something like that. But, nobody really wants to talk about the deaths by abortion, Sam, and all these little babies that, boys and girls that just continue to die. But, we got to focus on the
coronavirus. Well, let's be clear. One death is intentional, the abortion death. The other one is not intentional, meaning we should do everything we can to limit and reduce the amount of death. For everyone, everywhere, all the time. But, of course, if I bring that up, I'm nothing but a racist, right? All right, Bill Gates is behind all this vaccination stuff in the first place. And there's an article called Bill Gates Unmasked, Lowell.
It appeared in the Illinois Review, illinoisreview.com, written by Nancy Thorner. And she's basically asking, what is the story behind Bill Gates' mask? Well, it's this column she wrote, somewhat in response to a Netflix three-part documentary about Bill Gates that portrays the emotional side of Bill Gates. It humanizes him. It reinforces the image that many of us had of him as an ambitious technologist, an insatiable brainiac, and a heroic philanthropist, where just 20 years ago he was thought of as being, a tycoon, a harsh tycoon who did anything to win, right? I mean, but he's been recast as a philanthropist. And, for example, in this documentary, they interview a fellow named Bernie Noah. And it's not mentioned. They don't mention the fact that Bernie Noah is the principal of Lakeside School, which is a private institution to which the Bill Gates has donated over $80 million, right? And so they get glowing reviews from this Bernie guy about Bill Gates because he happens to be within the financial influence of Bill Gates. So that the whole documentary is does this. It's to bump up his image and to make sure everybody in the world knows that Bill Gates is this philanthropist with nothing but good intentions for everybody, the whole human race. But what we find when we dig into this is as a Bill Gates, very different behind the mask. The mask is this documentary. So what's behind the mask? Well, Alex Newman, our good friend from a journalist, a real journalist, writing for the New American on the June 22nd issue, that's just 2 weeks ago, explains why the scoundrel image of Bill Gates is both fitting and appropriate. For example, he says Gates is so powerful that he was able almost single-handedly to impose the national education standards known as Common Core on almost the entire nation. After Trump put on hold the U.S. contributions to the World Health Organization, Gates is now the world's largest single donor to the World Health Organization, an outfit literally run by communist Chinese-backed Politburo members. Gates has been a major donor to the UN Population Fund, which is the pro-abortion UN agency that specializes in reducing the human population and has been exposed in Congress working...
Lowell, we're about flat out of time, and I want you to get to a couple of quick statements here. These are really, really important. Okay? Bill Gates, in his speech, said this. Lowell?
He said, if we do a good job on vaccines, health, and production, we can reduce the world population by 10 to 15%. Only a genocide can save the world. End of quote.
Dan, think about that. Say that last statement one more time.
Only a genocide can save the world.
Is this guy a nut?
It's incredible.
The guy's a nut. And then Gate wants to inject... you, your whole family, Lowell?
And every single person on the entire planet with an as-yet undeveloped and untested vaccine. Then he wants to track you using technology. That sounds like it comes out of a science fiction movie. And unless and until everybody on Earth submits to Gates' vaccination demand, the technocratic globalist has declared repeatedly society cannot and will not return to normal. End of quote.
Who does this guy think he is, Lowell?
He is dangerous. He may have good intentions to save the planet, yeah, but he may have to kill you to do it, Sam. Well, I ask this question, for whom was this planet created in the first place, if not for you and me and all of the people on it? Why does he want to kill 10 to 15%. I can't believe it, Sam. Only a genocide can save the world.
Well, he wants more than 10 or 15%. He's just saying vaccines can start that process along.
Yeah.
But look, not only is the world created for us, let's be clear, it's created by a loving God. We are his literal offspring. He loves us. He cares about us. And he knows we're on the earth, and he knows Corona exists. And he wants us to be healthy and happy. And he wants us to work together to bring to pass the immortality and eternal life of man. And I, for one, am all about it. Final words yours, Lowell.
I'm all in, Sam. I'm all in. I'm all in. We must question people. Please question everything that comes from Fauci, from Bill Gates, and from the public officials who take their official position. Sam?
Thank you so much for your leadership, your involvement, all the incredible information you bring to the table. Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org. Godspeed.
Thank you.
All right, for Sam and Kurt, we declare, we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore our grand old republic, but you got to get involved, make it a great day, and choose the right, will you? God save the Republic of the United States of America. Incredible radio at LovingLiberty.net.